We bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Hello and welcome to Media Geek, your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, and a critical look at our media environment. My name is Paul Reese, and I'm your host. At the controls, of course, is producer Drew Tirico. On today's program, the birthday of Low Power FM. In fact, it's the fifth birthday. It's well beyond the toddler. We'll be hearing from Hannah Sassaman from the Prometheus Radio Project about an upcoming event to celebrate the birthday. As well, we'll talk about the just-announced resigning the retirement of FCC Chairman Michael Powell. All this on today's Media Geek. Do stay tuned. Well, the big news today as we go to air, which is January 21st, 2005, is that Michael Powell will be stepping down from the FCC. So we really just have one news headline to bring you first. And it's a little bit of sad news and also deals with the FCC. Long-running unlicensed radio station, KBFR, also known as Boulder Free Radio, was shut down by the Federal Communications Commission on February 11th. Little information about the bust has become available. The station's website simply displays a picture of a tombstone that says, quote, "Here lies KBFR," end quote. KBFR broadcast on FM without a license for nearly 5 years, even after having the FCC identify the station's transmitter on more than one occasion. KBFR enjoyed significant support from the Boulder, Colorado community and maintained operations despite intense FCC scrutiny and pursuit by using wireless internet and other technology to separate the studio and transmitter. DIYmedia.net reports that Monk, the station's presenter, says the station will remain off the air, and there may be a legal battle with the FCC in the future. Then we get to our real main news here. So the FCC announced for sure after the Wall Street Journal broke the story as part of an op-ed column, that Michael Powell, who is the chairman, will be stepping down beginning in March. Powell released a statement today that says, quote, "Having completed a bold and aggressive agenda, it is time for me to pursue other opportunities and let someone else take the reins of the agency. During my tenure, we worked to get the law right in order to stimulate innovative technology that puts more power in the hands of the American people, giving them greater choices that enrich their lives," end quote. That statement from the FCC also included 7 pages of accomplishments during Powell's tenure, including setting up a do not call list to block telephone telemarketers, the ability of cell phone users to keep their phone numbers when they change providers, and the increased availability of wireless internet connections in homes, offices, and coffee shops. I think the interesting thing about a couple of these things, such as setting up the do not call list and then letting cell phone users keep their phone numbers, is that those don't seem particularly deregulatory in nature.
No, they're not.
And indeed, in their editorial, the Wall Street Journal was sort of applauding Powell for his deregulatory turns. And those don't seem particularly deregulatory. Of course, when it did come to issues like media consolidation, for Powell, deregulation was the name of the game and the call of the day. Of course, then, the big question, there's two big questions, I think. First is, why is Powell stepping down now? And two, who's going to replace him? Now, and the second one, of course, only who knows for sure at the moment, is the Bush administration, although there are several obvious replacements. One is Kevin Martin, who is another Republican who served on the FCC right now as a commissioner. He split with Commissioner Powell with regard to telecom policy more than a year ago and joined a Democrat in bringing a 3-2 vote, which was a very big symbolic gesture. Many people thought it was his own bid to take some leadership positions within the FCC. Mm-hmm. Although most issues, he's tended to vote with the Republican majority. There's Becky Klein, a former head of the Public Utility Commission in Texas, and largely believed to be an old-school Bush crony. Mm-hmm. That's Bush, President Bush. And, of course, Patrick Wood III, who's the head of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and Michael Gallagher, head of the National Telecommunications and Information Administration within the Commerce Department. I personally don't know much about Michael Gallagher or Patrick Wood III. I wasn't able to pull up too much information today yet to inform us, and I'm sure this will be plenty of discussion on that in future weeks.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll be talking more about the candidates as they arise in some of the mainstream media. And I'm sure there'll be more analysis coming out about Powell, the reason for Powell's leaving.
Well, I think that's the most interesting question, because it was rumored pretty much all of last year that Powell will be stepping down. And, of course, it was rumored that, you know, at that point, depending on whether or not, of course, President Bush was to be reelected, since it is the president who appoints commissioners and also, therefore, appoints the chair. And since President Bush won, then it was in speculation, would Powell be stepping down? His father certainly decided to step down as Secretary of State. And it's during the changeover, even between two administrations, or really between two different terms, when you can see changes in cabinet, changes in posts at the different commissions. It seemed like if Powell were to step down, that would have been the most likely time for it to happen, the easiest time for it to happen. And so to do so and announce it after the inauguration is a little strange, I think.
It is, isn't it?
It is a little strange. And then it's supposed. And then the real question then is, did he fall or was he pushed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something to think about. There are certainly reasons for him to be pushed because of the amount of flack that he's received from his deregulation on the media ownership rules.
Well, and I think that alone wouldn't cause him to be pushed by the Bush administration. That doesn't really fall outside of their policy lines. And in fact, the Bush administration has really not been particularly interested in telecom or communications issues in general. Mm-hmm. And definitely the Bush's allies in the House leadership, the Republicans, have held the line when it comes to congressional action on things such as media ownership, and not countermanding the FCC or further allowing, say, low-power FM to be expanded anymore. So I don't think that would be it.
I don't think so either.
One of the chief criticisms of Powell from both the right and the left has been his inconsistency.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of people have seen inconsistency, especially more free market types, so people who are not cultural conservatives but who are fiscal conservatives, between, say, his willingness to go and on the sort of indecency jihad,
right,
and yet also go on the media ownership deregulation jihad, right, and maybe people see those as incompatible, and especially many cultural conservatives see those as incompatible as well, because even many people on the Christian right begin to see how media ownership. And the push towards, let's say, in radio, the push towards having syndicated programming rather than local programming, and often then syndicated programming is out of touch with even the values of local communities. They see how that is pushed by consolidated ownership and how local ownership often is at a different pace.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Howard Stern program originated in New York City, which you might argue has a very different cultural outlook, than say some places where the Howard Stern Show is syndicated.
Definitely.
And then where the Stern Show may have replaced a local morning program. Just as one example. And I think that is probably one of the chief criticisms, is that there's been a real inconsistency with regard to his outlook. And so for all of his speaking about being a real free marketeer and wanting the market to decide, that's not really something which is apparent in what he's actually done at the commission.
Yeah, I agree. I agree definitely. I think a big reason that he might have been pushed also is due to this inconsistency. He's not followed the Bush doctrine, you know, the doctrine that has come from the top. And you said that they haven't been too concerned with media, but then again, they are very concerned with you know, their media coverage. They are very concerned with the media that they can get. And I think that they see Powell as sort of a liability in that respect because he has some of his own he makes his own decisions in a lot of ways. He does not necessarily just simply fall in line, you know, much the same way that Colin Powell did not fall in line with the Bush mm-hmm. administration. Michael Powell had done a lot of the similar things where he was actually, you know, he was actually a chairman. He was not simply just a parrot for the administration.
It does seem that way. I mean, at least mm-hmm. that he seemed to be following his own muse, even if other people really don't know what that muse is.
Right.
In these lesser commissions, of which the FCC really is one, mm-hmm. especially when compared to the cabinet level positions, it seems to be less of a problem. But I think when it comes to issues like localism, when it comes to issues like media ownership, when it comes to issues like indecency and the coarsening of the content, the Bush administration is smarting a little bit
mm-hmm.
because there isn't a consistent line that they can go out and trumpet and say that we're cleaning up the airways, which it seems to me is something that administration would like to be able to trumpet.
Yes.
You know, in as much as, you know, it didn't interfere with their other policies. I agree. It's that inconsistency, and not necessarily that he's not parroting the line, but that even that the line isn't coherent in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
The presidents don't talk to FCC chairs very much. It's not a top priority. Nevertheless, they expect some level of consistency there. And there really hasn't been much. And so we really don't know for sure, but it's a very, very, very strange time to step down. And unless some other information comes out, you know, that he secured some major job or something that
uh-huh.
he wouldn't want to let go, or,
uh-huh.
you know, it's really hard to know, but the timing is very interesting. And what's interesting also is there's all these remarks, statements made by other FCC commissioners on the FCC website about his absence. And then they all say nice things about him. They say things nice about him personally. And he's a nice guy. And the Democrats primarily only congratulate him about basically wireless internet. and in preserving that there would be wireless spectrum for Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Many people would say the FCC hasn't gone far enough in making sure there's reserved spectrum for wireless internet or for unlicensed wireless internet. But nevertheless, that is something that's been maintained through the Powell ascendancy. And he does seem to have a certain understanding and even a fetish for technology and gadgets that you've not necessarily seen in past FCC chairs, which has sort of made him more favored by the tech industry and by a lot of, you know, by the high tech industry like you
yeah.
know, the IBMs, the Microsofts of the world, compared to other FCC chairs who have not given it much thought
right.
or play.
He was riding high on that. That's why I really think that there must be a little bit of not necessarily, you know, foul play, as in he was just completely ousted. But yeah, there must be some reason, because he seemed to enjoy his position. He was. I've read some interviews with him where he's been very proud of his accomplishments.
Yeah, yeah.
He's enjoyed his tenure. He wants to continue. He's very strong about that. You know, wanting to continue his leadership in bringing this world into, you know, bringing the 21st century in high tech and Wi-Fi and all over the place.
Yeah, I mean,
so I feel like there must be some outside reason that will surface eventually about exactly why he left. I don't think this was just he was tired and wanted to go home.
No, it does not seem like that's it. So, of course, the news is yet very, very young. We have many more days to
mm-hmm.
find out what truly is lurking within the halls of the FCC. But we're going to continue to talk a little bit about the halls of the FCC. Next up, we have an interview that we did earlier today with Hannah Sassman from the Prometheus Radio Project. And she's going to tell us more about an upcoming low-power FM day, celebrating the fifth birthday of non-commercial, community-oriented low-power FM broadcasting. So, Hannah, you're going to be throwing a birthday party, you and Prometheus, that is, for
right.
low-power FM.
Woo! Happy birthday, low-power FM. Yeah, it's really exciting. 5 years ago, actually just a couple days from today, like January, I think it was January 19th, which is the actual birthday for Low Power FM, is when the FCC, under William Kennard, agreed to establish a community radio service where community groups that were not-for-profit, schools, churches, environmental organizations, free media groups, labor organizations, could have their own media outlet, especially important in an era when consolidation of corporate media makes it less and less possible for any local voices to get on the air and put a counter opinion to the very, very conservative, primarily, and very, very corporate-minded news that most Americans have to deal with. So we're really excited to be having this event. It's going to be at the Federal Communications Commission, and Low Power FM broadcasters will speak about how difficult it's been for them to get on the air and the successes and challenges they've met, as well as coming together to talk about how important it is to expand the community radio service to reach thousands more people all across the country.
And so you'll be doing this with the FCC then?
The FCC is organizing an LPFM day, which they would really like to be a sort of non-controversial event where stations can say, well, it was difficult for us to purchase our emergency alert system, and we really wish you could get something a little bit cheaper for us. And that's important, but really we're interested in using this event to highlight how so many people were left out of the process when the National Association of Broadcasters and National Public Radio came together in 2000 and truncated the service, not allowing most of the stations that would have been in big cities like Minneapolis, Philadelphia, Boston to even get on the air.
Is this just going to be happening at the FCC? I think you have a larger slate of events going on as well.
Yeah, we do. We're going to be throwing a party the night before, and if you want to learn about it, you should check our website in the next couple of days or drop us a note at info@prometheusradio.org. And so that should be really awesome, and we really look forward to anyone coming there. And then in the afternoon, we'll be taking all kinds of low-power FM stations to their senators and congressmen so they can tell the people who have the power to expand the community radio service exactly how important it is for them to do it right now, because we're living in an era of such consolidation where there are no diverse voices on the air. So we're looking forward to all of those activities.
And do you expect there to be any congresspeople at the FCC for this Low Power FM Day?
We'll be inviting them, especially folks on the Commerce Committee, who have heard quite a lot about the problems of media consolidation over the past few years, when almost 3 million people wrote the FCC to complain about the increased regulation in both the radio and the other kinds of broadcast industries. So those folks are really well informed, and they're looking to Low Power FM as a real solution to the problem of an overly commercialized, consolidated media run by companies like Clear Channel and the News Corporation. We expect a number of those folks to be there, and we'll be visiting their offices as well.
Now, the original FCC order to create Low Power FM, as you mentioned, allowed for the creation of many more stations, especially in dense urban markets. What is the current attitude of the FCC towards restoring the Low Power FM to that standard?
Last year, about 9 months ago, the Federal Communications Commission came out with a huge report that they sent, that they commissioned through the MITRE Corporation, which is a big engineering firm, and it cost $2.2 million, and it determined beyond a shadow of a doubt that there was no potential interference from Low Power FM on the places on the dial where it was originally intended to go. And so they feel really strongly about it. The minute that that case came out, or that report came out, they went to Congress and said, now is the time to restore Low Power FM to its original borders. And so what we're going to be doing at this FCC Day is encouraging them to stand behind that great statement and take more effort, more energy to Congress, and to fight for what they had proven in that expensive and comprehensive study, that Low Power FM does not interfere with existing commercial stations and that the time is now to expand it.
Have there been other barriers to new stations getting on the air aside from that very clear barrier of the action that, by Congress and the National Association of Broadcasters?
Yeah, there has been. The FCC has not done a great job of supporting these stations, especially they didn't do a great job up until about a year ago, and then they started to do a slightly better job. Prometheus has been one of the few organizations that, when the FCC takes some kind of action on your application, let's say that they deny it, or they get an objection from someone else about it, or they grant you a construction permit, which means that you then have 18 months from getting that permit to build your station, the FCC doesn't doesn't tell people about it. They don't send them postcards or letters. So a lot of people have construction permits and don't even know it. And so their permits run out before they have a chance to get on the air.
Wow.
We've been contacted by many different folks who have been in that situation. And so we try to, with our three-person staff in a basement in West Philadelphia, keep up with it all as much as we possibly can to make sure these people know when the FCC has taken an action on their application and they have a chance to really fight to get their station on the air in this very difficult market when it's when you just have a community group and a dream. You don't have $15 million. You can't task someone to go research equipment. It's very inexpensive to put a low-power FM station on the air, but the FCC needs to tell you that it's time to do it, that you have permission, and that's where we come in. We try to help them figure out when the FCC is talking to them, how to understand what they're saying, and how to get cheap equipment so they get on the air before their expiration date.
And will these issues also be coming up in front of the FCC at the Low Power FM Day?
Oh, they definitely will. It's going to be really important that the FCC listen to these stations about the challenges they've been facing, about how hard it is to get on the air if they don't hear from the FCC, about how difficult it is to negotiate with their towns about putting towers up or putting up masts for antennas. There was a guy I met in Florida with a group called Jupiter Community Broadcasting. His town wouldn't let him put up a flagpole to put an antenna up, so he had to buy a big Washingtonian palm tree that cost $20,000 and put the antenna on this tree, which is crazy because the FCC always has tight restrictions about where your tower, quote-unquote, needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so these kinds of challenges, we're an ingenious bunch of crazy folks here in Low Power FM, and we'll meet those challenges if we have to, but the FCC should be making it as easy as possible for real community radio to flourish.
And so why is the FCC having this Low Power FM Day?
I think that they're having the day because there's been so much complaint coming from the public about a lack of real local broadcasting, real local voices on the air, on their existing stations or on new ones. So Low Power FM has been given a lot more attention, like I was saying, in the past year or so, ever since Michael Powell started this localism initiative where he says that he really wants to hear from people all across the country how they're dealing with the broadcasters that currently serve them, if they provide real local content. If they listen to local concerns and complaints when they come up, Low Power FM is one way to really combat that. And so the reason they're having this day is as one step where they analyze their ability to serve Low Power FM and hopefully change some of the different standards that they've set. For example, Low Power FM stations currently don't have what's called primary status, meaning if a clear channel station from 60 or 100 miles away with a really strong signal wanted to raise its tower up a couple hundred miles more meters or wanted to move its tower 2 miles to the east or west, if that signal suddenly was covering up the new low power signal, then that station, the clear channel station, would be given primary status. It would be given the opportunity to cover up that low power FM signal. Even if that station, the community station, had been serving a real group of people and had a great amount of support, these FCC or the FCC did not give LPFM the status it needs to be able to fight back. And so we'll be demanding that from the FCC at this day on February 8th.
Wow. That's something in particular that I actually did not know, that low power stations did not have primary status, and that kind of disturbs me quite a bit.
It's crazy. Another problem is that the FCC really stupidly opened up what's called a translator application window about 9 months ago. What that means is they allow any station on the air, commercial or non-commercial, if they think that they're not getting their full amount of coverage based on the contours of the map, let's say that there's a mountain or something where you would usually be able to send your FM signal out to cover some more folks on the other side of that mountain, they can apply for what's called a translator, meaning that that would repeat the signal of the existing station, allow them to cover up more of their ground. Now, that's all well and good, except translators were designed as exactly as I described it, as a fill-in service for your actual state, for your actual community of license if you have a full power station. What it's been used as a tool for primarily fundamentalist Christian rebroadcasters, groups like K-Love or Air One, to build build these sort of mini empires of satellite-fed radio stations that are getting their signals from thousands of miles away, and taking up spaces that low-power FMs could really use. We'll be asking at the FCC, as we've asked on different dockets, different official filing windows, where the FCC asks for comments about how it can better serve low-power FM and other kinds of stations, we'll be asking the FCC to freeze the implementation of that translator window so they do not allow these totally non-local stations to take the places of real community radio stations where they could be across the country.
Now, today we're hearing news that Michael Powell, chair of the FCC, plans to step down. Has he been a friend to Low Power FM in his tenure as chair?
It's been crazy. He hasn't been nearly as much a friend as someone like Bill Kennard, who was convinced to start a low-power FM service after seeing an amazing community radio station called Bush Radio, run by Zane Ibrahim in Johannesburg, South Africa. What Michael Powell has been is sort of a latecomer to the game. After all of these different sorts of folks all across the country criticized Michael Powell for giving away the spectrum to the highest bidder, to these big companies, Viacom, News Corporation, Cumulus, Clear Channel, he realized that America was angry about the deregulatory trend that the FCC had been taking for the past however many years, and that he needed to at least pay lip service to stopping it. So he said that he would support Low Power FM, process the existing licenses faster, and perhaps even look at a way to reopen windows to allow more stations to apply. And so he's at least been saying that he cares about our service, and he cares about folks like you living in Champaign-Urbana or Salida, California, or anywhere you're listening to this broadcast. He cares about folks like you having a real voice on the radio, he says. So that's been useful. Lip service is a good tool. Now, he's going to retire in March, which means that he will be at the FCC LPFM Day, or at least he says he will. We know Michael Powell hasn't shown up at the past few localism hearings in Rapid City or in Monterey, where he said he was going to go, to hear what you thought about the American media system. But we really hope he'll be there to hear about these real community radio stations in a congenial, collegial atmosphere where we treat the FCC with respect and ask them to treat us with respect, to give us the tools we need to make these stations survive and thrive.
And what do you think his stepping down, what effect that will have on Low Power FM, if any?
Well, I think that what it means is that we must all rally together, not just as people who care about community radio, but as media activists, people who care about a more democratic media system of all stripes from every movement across the country. If you care about anti-war stories, about stories about housing crisis, about AIDS crisis, about international news, about local news getting on the air, then we need to demand from the FCC and from President Bush that he appoint a new head chairman, a new chairman that truly listens to the public interest before he listens or before she listens to major broadcasters or telecommunications companies. We are their clients. We are their constituents. Bell South, Verizon, all of these companies are not supposed to be the clients of the FCC, the way Michael Powell has described them. So we might have a great opportunity to put someone in that chair who's really going to make a difference. But no matter who's there, we have a major movement on our hands here in the United States and around the world, and we will not relent. We will not allow any of these different decision makers to take our spectrum away from us.
And once again, Hannah, the LPFM Day is when?
It's February 8th at the Federal Communications Commission in Washington, D.C. And if you're interested in coming, you can give us a call at 215-727-9620, or you can visit our website at www.prometheusradio.org and drop us an email anytime. We'd love anyone who cares about community radio to come to D.C., to speak to the commissioners, to speak to their congressmen and senators, and demand our spectrum.
Hannah, thank you very much for talking to us, and keep up the good work.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And once again, that was Hannah Sassaman of the Prometheus Radio Project, and they are the people who most deserve the thanks for keeping Low Power FM alive and getting the stations that we have on the air. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek on the web at www.mediageek.org. There you can read the Media Geek blog for news that can't fit onto the show, as well as download archive episodes of the program in MP3 in the open-source Ogg Vorbis format. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to paul@mediageek.org. I'm host and executive producer Paul Riesmandel. Our producer is Drew Tirico. Media Geek is produced live at community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek is also heard on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and on KQRP in Salida, California. And Media Geek is free to broadcast on your local non-commercial station, too. To inquire, please send email to paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.